Hello and welcome to Answer Me This. Thank you for listening.
If you've just heard some ads, please know we do not control which commercials you get to hear.
But now they're done, here is an episode of Answer Me This. Hello and welcome to Answer Me This. Thank you for listening.
If you've just heard some ads, please know we do not control which commercials you get to hear.
But now they're done, here is an episode of Answer Me This.
Will Ferrell ever stop trying to make that hat happen?
Answer me this, answer me this.
What's the junktiest junction, spaghetti or Clapham?
Answer me this, Helen and Ollie, answer me this.
Listeners, I'm sure you've been on tenterhooks as we have been since Answer Me This 284, but you're going to have to wait a little minute to find out whether Greg from Baghdad's proposal was accepted or rejected, because we've had this incredible email, and it goes like this. My name is Lizzie, and I recently won the skeleton at the Winter Olympics in Sochi.
Wow. This is Lizzie Arnold.
Kapow, yes. Email from a gold medal winning Olympian. Thank you very much. You know how excited we were, listeners, when Michael the Archer, who was trying to qualify for the Olympics, wrote in to Answer Me This, and he didn't quite make it. This is an actual Olympian who won a gold medal.
Holy cow.
I've been a fan of your shows for many years, to the extent of borrowing friends' phones and uploading your podcast without permission.
Wow.
So she's been sabotaging other people's
That's quite a clever marketing technique. You know the new Michael Jackson album, they're basically doing that.
No.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, Sony are bundling it together with their new phones.
Wow.
How cynical is that? So if you're a Michael Jackson fan, you want to hear the 10 songs he recorded before he died, you have to buy whatever it is, an Xperia Z1.
Are you going to?
No. No, I'm not that much of a Michael Jackson fan. I can certainly wait.
You'll be on YouTube after 2 hours. Lizzie says, I just wanted to let you know that I enjoyed your piece about the Winter Olympics in episode 284.
Wow. And that, see, there you go. People who say we don't know anything about sports.
Idiots.
Gold-winning Olympian thinks we have something to say about sport.
Well, yeah, she says, thanks for your show. It's much appreciated, especially when I'm abroad training and competing. It really does keep me sane. Do you think she's listening to it when she's hurtling down icy shorts? Oh, my God. Lizzie, I have so many questions to ask you. For instance, how do you practice? Because hardly anywhere has an ice channel for you to practice on. So do you just slide downstairs on a tray, like we used to as children? And how do you get into a sport like the skeleton in the first place? Like, how do you think, oh, I'd be good at that?
Well, I read an article actually interviewing Lizzie Arnold talking about that, and she.
I want to hear from Lizzie Arnold directly, though.
You're not interested in your hearsay.
Now that we've got a direct line,
I know that she originally was qualified in something else. And then someone spotted her and said, no, you'd be better at skeleton. But she was doing something completely different.
How do you know that you have a talent for skeleton? Such an unusual sport. And Lizzie, as you do the terrifying sport of skeleton, do you give the bobsleighers a hard time for being soft? And lastly, is the Olympic Village the den of vice that everyone thinks it is?
Yes, I think it definitely is.
But let me know, Lizzie. It's amazing because often we'll talk about a thing and we'll think, one of our listeners is bound to work in this field.
Mm.
For instance, when we talked about Lego a few weeks ago, someone who works at Lego wrote in, say, oh, it's nice to hear you talking about Lego. But never really expected that someone training for the Olympics was listening to the podcast.
No, and equally, you do wonder, like we were saying things that were relatively flattering about Olympians last time.
Relative to our usual apprehension of sport.
Exactly. But you wonder, actually, we've slagged off celebrities in this show loads of times, you know, Jamie Oliver, Justin Timberlake. You do what? I mean, it seems ridiculous that they'd ever know, but actually, chances are someone who knows them has heard us.
Seems more ridiculous that they'd actually care, doesn't it, though?
Well, yeah, of course.
I think Timberlake's got a very fragile ego. He probably is.
Timberlake wouldn't call in, would he?
He'd be like, I can't believe you said I had halitosis, Helen. Just based on videos where you can't even smell me. Fuck what? You.
What's weirder is to think that someone who was standing on the gold-winning podium at the Olympics knows who Dave from Smethwick is.
Only one step removed from Dave from Smethwick.
Yeah.
I never thought it that way. That means
I know about Coco.
Your cat. She's a bronze medalist then,
exactly.
Technically.
But it is weird, isn't it, to think you've got brain space. Like, if you knew that John Kerry listened, you'd think, wouldn't you? Every time you saw him making a pronouncement about Russia, you'd think, ah, he knows all about the guy who put semen in his hair. Changes things.
Well, Lizzie Arnold, thank you so much for getting in touch. And I tell you what, your email was so exciting that even Martin, who of the three of us is the most sports ambivalent, he was like, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So that was very exciting feedback. But of course, we know that there is some other feedback from last week's episodes that everyone has been waiting for, and particularly Greg in Baghdad. So let's hear it.
Hi from Malin. This is Nora in Malawi. So the answer to the question is yes. I will marry Greg in Baghdad.
Yay! Yay! Whoop, whoop, whoop.
and the wedding is going to be in Finland in May. So if you could please let Greg know, that would be great. Thank you.
Aww.
And I wonder if Greg has been waiting to hear the response on the podcast.
I really hope that Nora got in touch with him in the fortnight in between episodes.
Although he made a rod for his own back by doing it on our podcast. I mean, we are an inefficient podcast to do this on. You know, Keith and the Girl comes out every day.
I've never felt that podcasting is a particularly romantic medium, but you're selling me on it. On to this question from Craig from Edinburgh, who says, I don't often listen to commercial radio,
but I only listen to Ollie Mann through the night, 1 till 4 a.m.
Oh, geez.
Right?
But when I do, I invariably hear Natalie Imbruglia's Torn at some point.
Oh yeah, I'm playing that all the time.
This might be just a weird coincidence, but it seems odd that an at best quite good single from 1997 would still be on such heavy rotation 17 years on that every commercial station has it programmed at least once a day. So answer me this. Does Ms. Imbruglia have compromising photos of some important people in the radio industry? And could Ollie check the LBC playlist to see if I'm right?
Obviously, as someone who never has listened to LBC, we don't play music.
No, it's speech radio.
The LBC playlist is UKIP, smacking, health tourism, obese children, cycling in London, and Stop and Search. That's not really any room for Torn.
They do come around at least twice an hour, though.
They do, yeah.
For me, it's not Torn, it's Hazard by Richard Marx, and the only time I hear it is when I'm in a taxi, and yet every single time. Seriously, it's uncanny.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? I mean, you're referring specifically to Magic there. We've discussed this before. I mean, Magic is an extraordinary station because there are songs on there that you didn't hear the first time round, and yet they're playlisted as if they were massive hits. So, like, there's that, sometimes when we touch, the honesty's too much. I lived through the 80s, never heard that song once, and yet it's on Magic every hour.
Glenn Medeiros is forever young on Magic. Nothing's gonna change, but
Love for You. That is a great song.
And a lot of Roxette, which I'm not complaining about.
No. And Savage Garden as well. Never went away. Never died on Magic. So I think Magic is living proof that there are some songs that the DNA of them, they just fit the station's demographic. They know ruthlessly who they're targeting with their advertising. Yeah. And that's what they match up with. And Torn is one of those songs. Like it or not, the DNA of that song, it's kind of a perfect pop song.
I think also it doesn't sound that dated because it's guitar-based. And I don't think many people absolutely despise that song, but there are many big hits that people now would run screaming from.
I think it's quite a competent piece of pop songwriting, isn't it?
Well, she'll be pleased to hear it.
Yeah.
Well,
except she didn't write it, of course.
Oh, no. Well, there was the whole controversy, wasn't there, that it was a stolen song from, was it a Swede?
No, it was a Dane. But actually, even the Dane didn't write it.
Oh.
It was originally written by a sort of four non-blondes type band called Edna Swap.
Edna Swap.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which sounds like a really dodgy sex practice, doesn't it? If you hear their version, it's on Spotify. It's really boring. It's all electric guitars and quite grungy. And it doesn't sound like Torn at all. I mean, you can just about identify the melody in there.
It's Know What's Going On.
It's Know What's Going On.
Don't You by the Pussycat Dolls. That was originally sung by a different singer who...
It was originally David Bowie sang that.
She's not the kind of glamour whore type of the Pussycat Dolls. So the fact that this relatively ordinary looking woman was singing it added quite a different spin to the lyrics, I thought.
Well, that's often what happens, isn't it? It's like the original You Can Leave Your Hat On, Randy Newman. He's playing a really seedy character in that. Baby, take off your shoes. It's like, I'm a dirty old man, come and lap dance for me. And then Tom Jones does it. Hey, I'm going to fuck you. Completely different. But it kind of works better in the Tom Jones version, you have to be honest, even though Randy Newman wrote it.
Well, Tom Jones sort of makes Sleaze seem tolerable for the 21st century.
Ironic Imbruglia fact.
Is Imbruglia epiphenomenal?
Epiphenomenal. Please explain for the ignorant, including me.
It means peripheral to something more interesting and important.
Why would you use a stupid word like that? Have you been reading Will Self?
It was a Will Self.
Why
reference.
Would you do a PhD? I mean, Martin's an endless enigma. My ironic Imbruglia fact is that as well as being known for the song Torn
and playing Beth in Neighbours,
she's also a spokesperson for Vaginal Fistula.
But
I just think it's funny that, you know, her most famous song is Torn, and that's she's a celebrity spokesperson for that.
It's not ironic, it's very appropriate. She was probably chosen as the spokesperson because of having done such an appropriate song.
Maybe.
She's also got that song, Big Mistake. Having a fistula is a big mistake. Not one you can help, I suppose.
What, can you name any other Imbruglia songs?
I don't think it's really a mistake. I mean, that suggests that there's some... there's some course of action that could stop you having a fistula.
Apparently I can't name another Imbruglia song. I know there was another one.
There was one more, yeah. There was another whole album, but, you know. Here's a question from Joe in New Hampshire, USA, who says, Helen, answer me this. Can you possibly explain the purpose of those saloon doors Well, I can help you out with that one. They're doors for a saloon.
Thanks.
That are always shown in Westerns. I speak, of course, about those swinging doors, which start at the knees and stop at the shoulders of a standard cowboy, or, say, Clint Eastwood or John Wayne. Obviously, they keep nothing out or in, including dust, wind or rain. What in the world could be the use of such a door?
Well, I think it's so that when a bar brawl broke out, you could throw someone through it dramatically so they sprawled into the street without breaking the door, so you had to replace it every time a brawl broke out, which, as we know, was all the time.
But that still happens all the time in Yates's Wine Lodge, and yet they have glass doors and security men.
They've just got a big human-sized cat flap at Yates's.
That would be great, wouldn't it? If they chucked you out from, like, the third floor up as well in some of those big ones in leisure parks.
Down a helter-skelter.
And you went all the way down and out into the car lot. That would be great.
I understand that the Batwing door... as they are
Batwing.
I think they are a trope that Hollywood has really run with, so yes. Now they're associated with saloons. Generally they had normal doors, and then Hollywood really went for the swinging doors. They would have let a lot of cold and dust in and problems, but apparently it may have been because they needed to ventilate the bar if people were smoking in there, for instance, and they were often long and windowless and stuffy.
Well, this is the thing, in the days before air conditioning,
yeah,
if you're in New Mexico or California or Mexico, indeed, you'd imagine that you'd need some sort of ventilation system, that you're in the shade, you're inside, but still you want some fresh air coming in, because if you're completely sealed, you'd schwitz, wouldn't you?
I think also there may have been something whereby a drinking establishment had to be shielded from the street because of the shame of it. And all the ladies of the night and everything. But they also wanted it to be accessible and for the noise to spill out so that people wanted to go in.
I guess as well... I'm sure they had rear entrances, but it gives you the option to ride right into the bar on your horse, doesn't
it? Oh, yeah, and then start shooting your pistols into the ceiling.
Well, or just, I was thinking, you know, if you're delivering some kegs or some nuts or whatever it was they
Moonshine.
Had. Moonshine. Yeah, because actually it's just, you know, in those days you didn't need a truck around the back. You could just, you know, bar's shut, stocking up in the morning, ride the horse right in.
Yeah, and also you can sweep without opening the door. I mean, it's pretty easy to open a door, so you might as well.
There's quite a potent image of the promise of violence, isn't there, in the saloon door?
There is.
Because you can make eye contact across the saloon door with your opponents, with the people who are about to draw a gun on you, but you can't actually start fighting until you push the door open.
Yeah.
And then you're in the sort of the space of combat. So it's a sort of restrained violence, which is a very common Western theme, isn't it?
This question is effectively an episode of 99% Invisible, isn't it? There's a lot you could say about doors to bars. I've never really thought about it before.
Roman Mars, I know you're listening. Can you just sort this out for us and report back?
Because there's the speakeasy door as well.
Is that a different kind of door? Is it not the same door?
No. Speakeasy door is...
Oh, sorry. Sorry for getting them mixed up.
No, I'll give you the cliche and then you'll know exactly what I mean. You knock on the door... hole opens, little flat. Who sent you? Well, you say something like, Dick sent me.
Yeah.
And then they shut the thing and then they wait 5 seconds, then they open it up and there's dancing girls.
Anybody? Who is anybody?
Somehow it's an entirely soundproof door as well.
Yeah.
Even though that technology probably didn't really exist.
And the party's always raging in a speakeasy.
Yeah. It's never just a load of pissheads.
And you're never there too early, so it's just you and the lights are all up.
Yeah, exactly. So we're just doing coffees at the moment, but if you come back in an hour.
If you've got a question, then email your question to answermethispodcast@googlemail.com. 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 answermethispodcast@googlemail.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Time for a question from Jax, who says, one of my very good friends is single and keen to bag herself a chap.
I see.
That's how it works, isn't it? Find Bagging. A man, put a bag on his head. Done.
If you like it, then you should have put a bag on it.
We have jokingly called this Project Husband.
Oh.
That's a great name for a TV show, I think.
Mm. I'm surprised that hasn't happened, actually.
Yeah, it probably has happened, hasn't it? Who to present? Joan Rivers, I think.
She, I think, would just scare so many of the women.
Okay.
Gokwan?
I think, no, well, that's quite good, actually. So you have Gokwan out on the street with a bag to bag the husbands, and then you bring them upstairs, yeah. And Joan Rivers is there to interrogate them.
It's sort of like Street Mate with Davina, but with an added element of hunting.
Mm. I think what I'm saying is Gokwan plus Joan Rivers plus Binliners, dream format.
Frightening.
The trouble is, continues Jax, she's a little dismissive of ways to meet men, and not really taken with the idea of online dating or Tinder, etc. I love to solve a problem. You and us both, Jax. Mm. And have convinced her that going to a singles night would be a good compromise, as it's a bit closer to a natural environment of meeting someone, i.e. getting drunk near some boys. However, she doesn't have any single friends to go with her and asked if I would go along.
Right.
I am recently married. And whilst I've done my fair share of standing next to friends being chatted up and my husband doesn't mind me going, I feel a little uneasy. I'm not suggesting that the entire room will flock to me, but if I'm stood alone, there's a reasonable chance I might get chatted up. I don't want to be one of those awful knobs shouting, "I've got a husband," the second anyone of the opposite sex talks to me. But also, they'll have probably paid £15 to meet some single women, so I don't want to waste their time. It's good to look at it from a commercial basis, isn't it? Jax continues, also, I suffer mildly with social anxiety and a desperate need to be liked.
Called being a human being.
So we're all on that scale, yeah. So brushing people off but still being liked is highly important to me.
Well, okay, so you could get something out of this affirmation.
So, Helen, answer me this. At what point do I politely decline any potential suitor's advances? And how?
Well, it's tricky, isn't it, though? If she wants to be liked, it means she can't go looking hideous and mad, which would drive away a lot of suitors. Like, if you went unwashed wearing a stained tracksuit... Mm. That would keep them away.
Yeah, but also...
Maybe.
I don't know. If I was at a singles night and I was looking around and all the women looked kind of samey because they'd all put in an effort...
You'd go for the naughty one.
If there was one that had, sort of, you know, moths flying around her hair and wearing an old jumper with holes in it, I'd kind of think, she's interesting.
Like, she looks like a gas.
I would.
And that's how Helen and I met.
It is cool when people don't try too hard, isn't it?
Yeah, it kind of is. That's the thing. And I'd think at least I want to have a conversation with that one.
Yes.
Because she's interesting. She's different.
I want to know what sort of moth that is.
And also, actually, I'd probably think somewhere in the back of my mind, I think, if one of the pretty girls saw me talking to that one, they'd think, oh, he's not just interested in looks. Which is a good thing to seem to be doing at a singles night. So that could backfire.
You're such a pickup artist.
Yeah.
On the other hand, women often enjoy the competition of beating someone they feel is superior to them for the affections of a man. So maybe they wouldn't see Moth Lady as a particular inducement for their own romance.
Maybe.
I can't believe that your friend doesn't have any single friends and that you, Jax, can't rustle up a singleton to go with her because you're taking up the place of somebody who could be legitimately looking for love.
Why can't she go on her own? I mean, I know it's a bit intimidating and so on, but...
But it's a singles night, that's the point.
Yeah, they're all alone.
I think I'd prefer going by myself to singles night.
It's embarrassing someone you know watching you doing flirting or making a sexy face. I mean, that's mortifying.
The thing is, as well, you might be inclined to massage the truth a little bit about your life and your lifestyle.
Yeah.
And that's difficult when your friend's there because they're on to go, oh, no, that's not true.
Yep.
You didn't do that. Shut up, I did. I so did own that company.
Your friend needs not to use you as a lifeline on this singles night because then she won't talk to any new people. She can't just stand in the corner and chat to you, feeling safe. She's got to go out there and mix.
Okay, so I think we're all saying, actually, we'd prefer the idea that she didn't go at all. But assuming she is going, she's committed to going. An obvious way out of this is wear a really ostentatious wedding ring.
But then you may be barred from the singles night.
Not if you've paid.
It's like going to Fight Club going, I'm just here to watch.
Yeah.
And it seems like Jax wants the ego boost of being flirted with by men and then not have to do anything about it.
But actually, the bottom line is, there's nothing wrong with flirting with someone, even if you're in a relationship. At some point, you have to tell them you're in a relationship and you don't want to be leading them on. But having a 10-minute flirtatious conversation, truth is, the chance that the person who's flirting with you really, really likes you and wants to take you home and is assuming that something's going to happen is probably only 20% anyway. They're probably just thinking, well, this is a fun, flirty conversation, then I'll go and talk to someone else.
Yeah, that's a good point. They're probably there to gather as many contact details as possible. Just give them the wrong ones. In fact, adopt many mysterious identities and have a bit of fun that way, Jax.
Mm.
What you could do, Jax, is pretend to be one of the staff at the venue. Start clearing tables so your friend can go and talk to you if she's feeling insecure, but you just, like, stack up glasses and take them back to the bar.
I was wearing a yellow polo shirt the other day in IKEA and someone thought I was soft. So maybe that's it. Just watch what people are wearing.
Yeah.
And if you can match that in some way, people will just assume you're staff and then you don't have to necessarily think through the deception.
Why don't you go in a nun's habit? Just looking to make sure that nothing too impure goes on.
Yeah, nice idea.
Well, now it's time for a short intermission brought to you by Answer Me This, episode 128. Available now at answermethisstore.com.
When I first started at secondary school, there was this woman called Penny who was charged with looking after us.
Penny.
Who was this Irish woman who was obsessed with America. Absolutely obsessed. Anyway, she was so into Americana that her thing was, at the end of the year, her class, who were 10 years old, would go into the Leavers Ball, which was 17 and 18-year-olds.
Drunk ones, presumably.
Drunk 17 and 18-year-olds. And perform for them the Grease Megamix.
Ooh.
It's horrifying, isn't it? And I was part of that. She'd done it the year before, and they'd loved it. Yeah. The Leavers Ball, it had gone down a storm.
Someone had spiked the punch with something really psychedelic that year.
But we just weren't up for it. We weren't getting it, and it was really obvious right from the beginning.
Tell me more.
But I'll tell you the reason why. We had, I think it was 18 boys, 3 girls. So the whole kind of summer loving thing was just uncomfortable.
Like a pack of advancing wolves.
Let's take a question from the phone line, folks. The number for which is
02081235877.
Or you can Skype, Answer Me This. Let's see who's done that.
Hi, my name's Philip from Berlin. Every year I go to my aunt's house in London for Seder night at the beginning of Passover. She's a vegetarian, so there's never any meat, and she usually cooks a big fish pie or some other kind of course. But I don't eat seafood. And so for the last 15 years or so, I've had a bowl of mini baby bells, the little cheeses, all to myself. And that's been my main course, because I once said I liked them. But now I feel like I need a bit more to get me through these long evenings. I've just found out that this year, my aunt's going to be doing 2 Seder nights. So I'm going to have to do it twice, and I don't want to eat 2 bowls of baby bells. So bearing in mind that historically, she hasn't taken anything critical very well. Helen only answered me this. How can I gently suggest to my aunt that I need something a bit more substantial for Seder night?
Well, anyone who serves you a bowl of mini baby bells is obviously so demented that giving her a sensible argument isn't going
to
work.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think you have to be direct, but not in a way that's critical of the baby bell itself. I think what you have to do is say... Auntie, this mini baby bell is so delicious.
However, did you make it?
I'm even prepared to branch out into some other kinds of cheese.
I think exactly. I think, you know what's really nice is baby bell and brie. I think that's what you have to say.
Or you could just tell her that at the moment you've been told to cut out dairy.
Yeah, and then what's he left with? Because she
Peanuts.
Doesn't have meat and he doesn't eat fish.
Matzah?
And it's Passover, so you can't even have bread.
Matzah. Yeah. Matzah's nice.
Can I ask a question of Jews?
Yes.
Cheese.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is made from rennet,
yeah,
which is animal stomach.
Yeah, skip to the point.
Milk and meat.
Yes.
If you eat cheese, which is made with animal rennet,
yes, you get.
Is that mixing milk and meat?
You can get vegetarian cheese, kosher cheese.
So you just have to. You just have to eat vegetarian cheese,
but
not
also
with animal rennet.
Jews often overlook contradictions.
Logic.
In yes. Sorry, my people, but yeah. You know it's true.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole thing is based on the idea that God passed over the doors of the firstborn who put a bit of slaughtered goat on their door.
Lamb blood, wasn't it?
Yeah. But then killed the firstborn of everyone else.
God is such a knob.
He's a massive
dick in that
story.
Why does everyone worship him when he's such a nightmare?
I know, and they're like, oh, thank you, God, for liberating us from slavery. It's like, yeah, what the fuck were you doing for the other 2,000 years?
Yeah. Just letting us get on with it. Yeah.
All right, Richard Dawkins.
Passover is fun anyway, even though I don't believe in it. I mean, I do believe that the story happened, obviously, to some extent. I believe there were Jews in Egypt in
slavery.
They
went on a walk.
What's nice is that you know that the Jewish people for 3,000 years have done that exact ceremony in exactly the same way that I'm doing it. Well, not in exactly the same way, because all my family shout at each other rather than concentrate on the Hebrew. But, you know, basically in exactly the same way. And that element of tradition is quite exciting.
Yeah, what the bitter herbs and the hard-boiled egg. What's the egg for?
It's always tears. I don't know. The salt.
Yes, it is.
The salt
all
is always tears.
Taste of tears. I'm talking Ashkenazi foods, because Sephardi Jew foods are delicious.
Yeah,
when God killed all the firstborn, he cried. And the first egg. Tear that hit the ground turned into a giant egg.
The egg is something to do with birth, isn't it? Rebirth, yeah. From rebirth from slavery or something like that. And the salt is tears.
Yeah.
That soup's great, though. She does this sort of... I guess it's a chicken soup, really, but they put so much salt and egg in it that it's... No, but it's delicious. It's really nice. But it's... salt. You've got to like salt and egg.
Chicken and egg is a very immoral combination. Never mind milk and meat. Yeah.
Well, Philip's aunt's a vegetarian, so it's not going to happen. But Philip, maybe you could say to her, look, two nights in a row, that's a lot of work for you. Maybe I could cook one night and then cook something that's not Baby Bell.
Presumably, though, just because she doesn't eat meat and you don't eat fish, I mean, there is a world of vegetables in between. I mean, how did you arrive at Baby Bell as the solution?
Well, Philip doesn't know. How does anyone arrive at a bowl full of Baby Bell as a meal?
Because he once said he liked it. That seemed to be the... he once said, oh, I like Baby Bell. Mm. And his aunt has gone, oh, brilliant. Well, we're just feeding Baby Bell every time. So.
Yeah, this happened with my non-Jewish grandmother. In the 70s, she read in a magazine a recipe for a soup, which was tinned consommé whipped up with Philadelphia and curry powder.
Oh.
The Philadelphia rises to the top and forms a curry flavoured plug. And my parents like, this is lovely, thank you. And got served it every time for 20 years. And it's disgusting because it's
so
like
difficult, isn't it?
Runny vom.
Someone's got a recipe, they like to stick with it.
Ugh.
And you've got to be complimentary the first time, haven't you? Even if you don't really like it.
But then they think, well, I better not deviate. So I think you probably have got to pretend that there is some medical condition that you can't eat Baby Bell.
Yeah, maybe that's the way forward.
But then you can't have any other cheese.
But I think what you've got to do, I mean, on her past form of feeding you a bowl of cheese, you've got to be specific. You've got to say, my doctor says I need to only eat salad.
Because
lettuce, cucumber and tomato mixed up.
Jews love the words of doctors as well.
Exactly.
So she'll probably go for that.
Yeah. Dr. Levy said, that's how you... Dr. Levy said, I need to eat green salad twice a day. Then at least you've got yourself some balanced meal there.
Well, I think a simpler option is just to bring some of the ingredients you might want to eat.
Weird say tonight thing.
Oh, was it when our dog proved herself to be Elijah?
No, but go on.
Because you know at Passover you lay an extra place at the table and then at some point you open the door and allow Elijah to come in.
Mm-hmm.
The dog came in. She is Elijah.
Right.
She's dead now.
It wasn't.
So is Elijah.
It wasn't that.
Oh.
No, my thing is, so for the benefit of Gentiles listening... Mm. On Seder night, what you do every year is you retell the story of the liberation of the Jews from slavery. And
never gets old.
And you all go around the table and you read a verse from this book, which tells the story. And you only read it at Passover. I mean, some people probably really love the book and read it all the time, but that's weird. So you all go around, you all take a verse each. And in secular families, especially in Britain, it's become traditional to not just read the Hebrew because no one understands what that means, but actually read the English translation.
Yes.
So we go around, we actually read it all in English. So we do a few concessions to Hebrew, but it's mostly in English.
Can you read Hebrew?
Very slowly and embarrassingly, like I have to like phonetically work it out, and then a bit like when I'm playing the piano and I have to write out F-A-C-E on the scale.
Presumably you peaked when you were 13, because after bar mitzvah you don't really need to use it that much.
Yeah, but it hasn't come up much in my career in podcasting. But we all go around, we take a verse in English. Anyway, my family on Passover is, there's probably about 16 of us, right? Because it goes up to like first and second cousins. My auntie Elaine has everyone around.
Mm-hmm.
We all take a verse of the book each, and then it goes on to the next person, a bit like reading comprehension aloud in school. Somehow, I always manage, it doesn't matter where I sit, doesn't matter whether I'm sitting at the end, in the middle, whether it starts with me, whether I'm the last to read. Somehow, when it gets to the passage about what the stupid child asks, it's always me. And I do think that is some kind of sign from God.
What does the stupid child ask?
So that one of the stories at Passover is, why is this night different to all other nights? And you go around and it said, the learned child asks, why is this night different to all other nights? And the learned rabbi said this. And then, you know, the inquisitive child asks, da 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 da. It's written like a fairy story, you know.
Right, yeah.
And then it always gets, and basically it means the slow, probably mentally disabled child asks. And I can't remember exactly what they asked, but it's something really stupid.
Like, the toilet.
Yeah.
Why isn't there a musical about Passover?
And it's always me. It's always me playing the stupid child. And it's incredible. It is like a sign from God. I don't know if my family plan it out that
trolls,
way as a joke.
Trolls.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing.
God's a troll.
But yeah.
Biggest troll of them all.
Do you remember how websites used to be? Comics on and backgrounds that look like trees. Flash intros, links to GeoCities.
But now, thanks to Squarespace, your site needn't be crappy. They make great design easy, so everyone's happy. And on desktop phones and tablets, your site looks well snappy.
Thank you very much, Squarespace, for sponsoring this episode of Answer Me This.
Yes. Thank you. And thank you for everything you're doing, Squarespace, for making the internet look a less cluttered place with your beautifully designed web templates. If you would like to design a website that looks nicer than a shit one, go to squarespace.com, free trial, and then if you like it and you want to buy it for the year, use the code ANSWER3 to get 10% off. Time for a question from M, who says, Helen, answer me this. Why is rented accommodation uniformly magnolia? It's not nice. It looks, probably through the association of experience, grubby.
Well, it is the same colour as grubby paint, though, even when it's new.
It's the exact colour of a white wall that's faded, isn't it? Well, M says, it reveals weird stains.
Reveals? Is that fair?
Yeah, no, I don't think it is fair, and I think that's the answer to the question. I think it actually suppresses some weird stains compared to white paint. That's the point of it.
I think it evens out the weird stains because it all looks like weird stains.
Exactly, I'm assuming that all private landlords, continues M, are feckless, tasteless brutes with an ingrained hatred of individual expression, but I may be jumping to conclusions.
Seems fair.
No one loves magnolia. Bet Dulux love it.
Yeah, cha-ching.
But a pretty good premium they can put on that, isn't it?
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because there are a lot of things that they think, well, no one loves this, but no one hates it. Mm. But they're wrong, because I hate magnolia.
Would you prefer a wall with real character that was more divisive? So, for example, if your landlord, instead of recently painting your walls magnolia, had said, right, you're going to have half pink, half black, what would you have felt?
At least it would be something.
It would be. Would be a strip club from the 1980s. Would you like it, though?
Well, that was my best era for going to strip clubs. In our old house, the ceilings were all made of what looked like saunas. They all had the, like, orange pine planks. And the landlord who built that house was like, I don't think I'd do that again. I guess because it is divisive and it makes you think of people sweating in a shed.
Well, that's it. I suppose they must have done market research one day, or perhaps it's apocryphal. But anyway, the perception is most people find magnolia the most inoffensive.
Or just because when you're a renter, you don't really have the choice to be offended by it. You're rarely allowed to decorate your own home. That's what you're stuck with. How can you protest?
Okay, but you're seeing that from the renter's point of view, but
seeing it from the
landlord's point of view, they're trying to maximise the amount of money they can get. They want a bigger return. If they knew that by painting it orange, more people would pay them more money, they would, but clearly that isn't the case.
But what about just white? Some say it looks stark, but magnolia has a lot of grey in it, so that can look very dingy and cold.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, but I just assume that the market has dictated this for a reason.
I think it's just sheep-like mentality.
Maybe. And is magnolia cheaper than white paint?
That's what I was just about to ask.
Maybe it is.
You've been repainting a house. Well, Did you even consider painting any room magnolia?
No. Well, here's another question of home improvement.
Oh, you can't call magnolia an improvement.
From Joe, from Fairham, who says, having moved house recently to a doer-upper, I've spent a large part of the last few weeks drilling into the freshly plastered walls, putting up curtain rails and pictures, etc.
Sex swings, etc.
That is a heartbreaking process, actually, because if you've plastered the walls,
breaking into a pristine wall,
because it can go wrong, and even if it goes wrong just by an inch.
I think putting up a sex swing is a disheartening process. I don't even know what a sex swing is.
I guess any swing can be a sex swing, can't it? Actually,
I'm not those ones that are clearly meant for people so young they can't even sit up by themselves
with the little cages in them.
Could be good
for BDSM.
Stop it.
At the start of this process, continues Joe, I asked my wife to pass me a rawl plug.
Oh, yeah.
Racy.
It's a great story so far, but what happens next?
Amazing.
But after overhearing someone in B&Q referring to rawl plugs as wall plugs...
No.
Speech defect.
I have now started using this different terminology at home.
It is good to shake things up a bit.
bringing fresh ideas into the bedroom. My wife has asked why I have changed.
Joe, you're not the man I married!
Rather than tell her I was just copying someone who looked like they vaguely knew what they're doing, I just made up a story about rawl plug being a brand name, so it's the same thing as a wall plug. So Helen, answer me this. Am I right? If not, why did I use the term rawl plug? And which should I use moving forward so I can impress the till staff at B&Q with my vast DIY knowledge? Because, of course, they really care about that, don't they? They're all on minimum wage. Yeah. And the only thing that gets them through the day is whether Joe from Fairham knows what a rawl plug is called.
Yeah. These are people who are starved of natural daylight, Joe. You think they give any shits? Why are you talking to them about rawl plugs anyway?
Yeah. The most exciting moment of the day is when people ask for nectar points and they're like, no, that's home base.
Why don't you just ask them about their lives?
Exactly.
Always talking shop.
Does he have a point?
Yes. Well, he didn't really make up this story at all. So, wall plugs... Mm. were invented by John Joseph Rawlings, who then named them Rawl plugs after himself.
Which you would, wouldn't you, if you invented something so boring? You might as well get out of it.
Might as well get a bit of glory out of it.
Yeah.
So the generic term is wall plug, but because they are Rawl plugs and he perfected the Rawl plug, they are both.
And yet, I bet you can't actually get Rawl plugs as a brand anyway. I bet it's not registered.
I haven't looked, to be honest. I mean, listeners, this is how much I love you. I have read 3 histories of Rawl plugs today, and that is as far as I'm willing to take this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that's reasonable.
In my journeys within DIY superstores, I've not noticed that there is a brand of Rawl plugs.
Are they called Rawl plugs?
Well, this is it. Maybe they are called Rawl plugs.
It's just so boring that you can't actually take on this information.
I think they're wonderfully designed items.
But what are they supposed to be called, Martin?
I think they're called Rawl plugs. But I suspect it's one of those things where lisping and like language mutation will mean that in 100 years' time, if this exists, they'll be called Rawl plugs. Because it makes more sense. And it's almost the same word as Rawl plug.
What about John Joseph Rawlings' legacy, Martin?
I wonder whether the technology is going to come for a super adhesive that's easier to put up than a Rawl plug. Because you still need to have a basic knowledge of DIY. You've got to use a drill and a hammer and like get it in line. And someone like me.
What?
Super adhesive will ruin your wall.
You're barely a man, Ollie man. Come on,
Martin.
It's not that difficult. You drill a hole. You hammer the plug in. You snip it off.
Stop. What you've already said is difficult. I've never drilled a hole.
You've never drilled a hole.
No, and I've got a drill. I went and bought a drill because I thought that will make it easy to drill a hole by a drill.
You've got a hand tremor, though, so you could start drilling a hole and take out a whole wall.
I can open the box that the drill's in.
Good, that's a start.
That's step one.
Important.
But then you open it up and there's like 12 different sizes of drills in there, and A, I don't know which one I'm supposed to choose for the job because I'm just drilling a hole. I don't know what size it's supposed to be. And B, I can't then get the drill bit attached to the drill without looking in the instruction manual because there's no obvious button on there to do it.
Do you know what, Ollie? I think that you are striking a blow for gender stereotypes, so congratulations.
I'm a warrior.
Do you want me to give you a tutorial? I'm a nerd.
No.
And I know how to use a drill. Yeah. I hate sports, but I can still put up a picture.
I know how to pay someone with a drill. That's good enough for me. I had a handyman came over about a month ago, and it was great. It was a proper... He's the proper village handyman. He advertises in the parish newsletter. And I waited till I had 12 jobs for him to do, all of which I should have been able to do myself. But it was just so satisfying to pay a proper man £100 to do them all for me.
That's awful.
So he painted a bit of the ceiling that I couldn't reach, which I was worried I'd fall down the stairs if I did. He cut off the TV aerial, which we don't need because we've got Virgin, and it was just kind of protruding from the wall. He sanded down the door to the garage.
Are you going
to
tell us all 12 jobs he had to do?
Well, not if you're not interested, Helen.
Fancy that, I'm not.
The only people that normally need help with those sorts of jobs are... Like
old women, I know.
Elderly widows.
Yeah, I know, but look, he did a good job, and if I'd done them myself, I would have done a bad job.
If you give me £90, I'll come and do those
jobs. Okay, deal.
My dad apparently flipped out when my mum suggested that they get a tree surgeon in to deal with the fact that 6 massive trees had come down in their garden during the recent storms.
Because he likes to believe he's handy with an axe, doesn't he?
Well, he is handy with an axe and a chainsaw, but he is a man in his 70s who is incredibly slow, but he felt that he was very much unmanned by this suggestion. That's how seriously he takes his home lumberjacking. Well, since I found them out, you're going to hear some Rawl plug facts.
Oh, brilliant. No. Rawl
plugs.
Well up for it.
Yeah, the reason why Rawl plugs came to be is thanks to the British Museum. What happened is that after the First World War, they were retrofitting a lot of old buildings with electrics, so they needed time-saving devices quite quickly, and they didn't want to damage the masonry in the British Museum, and they needed the fittings put on there unobtrusively. And so John Joseph Rawlings invented the Rawl plug to do just that.
Oh, was he actually contracted by the British Museum then?
I think he was an inventor. He did other sort of DIY things. He had a company from the 1890s.
Oh, so it's interesting. It was essentially, you know, something that's now a staple of...
It's not a staple. It's a Rawl plug.
fixture.
Yeah.
In both senses.
Okay. Yeah.
Of DIY was something that was invented really for a tourist attraction, you know, with an industrial purpose.
Stick with us, listeners. Here is another amazing question of why a boring thing is called a boring thing. It's from Michael from Southampton, who says, Ollie, answer me this. Why is the place for deleted files in Windows called the recycle bin? You can only choose to delete the files forever or to take them out again. I'm not a waste management expert, but that doesn't sound like recycling. Because you're either disposing or retrieving. You're not transmuting it into a different thing.
Correct. I mean, well, I think there's 2 reasons for this. Reason number one, it is to indicate that theoretically you could use the files again, which obviously you can. You're not just throwing them away, you're putting them in a place which you can get them out of, which is a form of recycling. Okay.
Could it be argued that you're also recycling the available computer space by disposing of this file to fill it with another file?
That's very clever lateral thinking.
It's adequate lateral thinking.
No, it could be. It absolutely
could.
Well,
when you recycle something, you don't expect it to retain its original form. If you have a plastic bottle, you don't expect it to make another identical plastic bottle. You just expect the plastic to be reused.
Sure.
In the same way, the ones and the zeros from that file will be used in a different way that won't reflect its original form.
But I think the second reason is the real reason, and it's a reason of copyright. Apple came up with the phrase trash first. So Apple copyrighted in its Lisa interface in 1982 the word waste basket. And then sued anyone who used the word trash or anything like it. So Microsoft thought, what's close enough?
Rubbish. Wheelie bin.
Recycle bin. So hence recycle bin.
Wow.
Which
okay.
actually I think is actually...
I'm satisfied with that, and I didn't expect to be.
I think they did well, because I think Windows 95 would be worse without that functionality. So it's just as well they had it, and they had to call it something. And I think it is far enough away from trash to not be suable.
Is that when they introduced it, 95?
Windows 95, yeah.
Wow.
Okay,
yeah.
Tech rant. You know Clippy, right? You brought
I do.
Up Clippy.
Fucking hate Clippy.
Well, you're going to hate new Google Maps, because when you sign into new Google Maps, they're like, hi, I'm Mappy Tosspot,
no,
and I'm here
they
to
don't,
help you.
Do they?
Yeah, little yellow waving
have
man.
Have we learned nothing from the last 20 years of watching people have meltdowns in front of computer screens?
I threw him in a lake.
Oh. Did you hold him down and watch him drown?
I was watching him wiggling his little yellow limbs. I threw him down onto a busy motorway.
But I do wonder, actually, if you locate this to 1995 as well, I wonder whether, in the context of Microsoft being evil global corporate and everything,
whether, by my brother.
whether actually the term recycle bin was the work of some hippie-ish programmer who actually thought, yeah, let's promote the idea of recycling subliminally through our product, even though the whole notion of unnecessarily upgrading your computer from one Windows platform to another does create waste.
But if you look at Microsoft versus Apple, when their computer gets out of date, you just chuck it in the bin and buy a new one. Where Microsoft, you could buy a new motherboard back in the day, a new hard drive. There is a recycling element.
Yeah. Also, you don't have to call it recycle bin on Windows. If you're a proper nerd, there are cut arounds so you can rename it.
Anything you want.
Yeah, so Martin, I presume yours would be the WAS-flaps disposal or something.
Yeah.
What would you...
That's what it's called.
I don't know if we've discussed this before, but all the things Martin names on Helen and Martin's joint computer
awful
system,
things.
They're appalling
shitty
things.
Flaps.
But just a point. Like, I just, at one point you're going to have someone's mother around and they'll be like, what's the Wi-Fi, darling? Oh, it's piss cunt. Oh, piss what?
What was the password? It's shitty jism.
I'm sure there's a folder when we were recording this and I was in a particularly bad mood.
Yes, there is, called Helen's Cunting Shit Fuck. Thank you very much.
Sorry, I thought it was Ollie's Cunting Shit Fuck.
You're a nightmare, Martin.
So yeah, so given the opportunity, what would you rename a recycle bin?
Skanky old bucket.
I'd probably go for something a bit more existential, like sort of wormhole or, you know.
I'd call it the file cemetery.
That's quite good, yeah. Although you are then introducing death into a program that they were marketing very much as a rejuvenating force.
Oh, you've got me thinking really hard now about what you'd call that folder, because there's a information theory that says if you destroy information, it consumes energy. So just to get rid of information, it consumes energy. Maxwell's furnace, something like that.
That's where Martin's going with this, are you?
Sometimes Martin says things during the podcast recording, and I make a little note with myself. I'm like, I'll enjoy listening back to that at some point.
Writing,
I'll understand
making some
it.
Notes, looking up on Wikipedia what Martin's on about.
Google Shannon's information theory, kids.
A couple of years' time, I'll listen back, but in the moment, I've no idea what he just said.
Well, that brings this episode to a close, but in order to open the next episode, we need your questions, and so please email, phone, or Skype them to us. Our contact details, for your convenience, are on our website.
AnswerMeThisPodcast.com. And remember our various audio side projects as well. You can listen to me every night, weeknight, from 1 till 4 a.m. on LBC.
Helen... Those hours never get any easier.
Well, you can listen to... There's an LBC podcast app as well if you want to get the podcast, but it does cost. I think it's £2 a month. Yeah. Helen?
I do many side projects. You can see what on my website, helenzaltman.com.
And Martin?
I do a kind of stuff as well. I have a very busy and exciting life, in fact. But you might want to listen.
Yeah, of course.
You
yeah.
might want to listen to some of my music at thesoundoftheladies.com.
What a way to spend the next 2 weeks, listeners! Don't say we don't look after you on our weeks off.
And we will see you in 2 weeks' time.
Bye.